Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you broadcasts from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Levanger, and we'll step in now to an hour of horror. Later on, it's Quiet Please from 1948. But first, The Haunting Hour, with the story The Sixth Button, this NBC episode released for syndication in 1945.
Stillness of this moment, for this is a time of mystery, a time when imagination is free and moves forward swiftly, silently. This is The Haunting Hour. The Sixth Button. Sleep does not come easily to the harbor. Even at 2 a.m, there is a restlessness fretting the black ships and the green water. The whistles still blow, but their sound is melancholy and weary. The lights along the shore begin to blink their good nights. In one of the harbor's darkening taverns, sleep will be forgotten for some time. Its solitary customer, an ancient sea captain, rests heavily against the bar. Within him burns a tale, and he will not rest till it is told.
2 o'clock. Well, it's getting late, barkeep. You'll be wanting to close.
I'm open till 3.
Well, my ship doesn't weigh anchor till then. We both have time.
Yeah.
You're sure you want to hear the story?
Story? Sure. Why not?
Another glass, then.
Right.
You join me?
I don't mind.
Well, as I say, the land's no place for a man of the sea. Captain Jeremiah Stebbins should have known that. And he should have known there wasn't a crueler man anywhere in the world than Harvey Adams. Captain Stebbins treated Harvey and his wife, Paula, as if they were his own children. He took them in and shared his home with them. But that wasn't enough for Harvey. Oh, no. Harvey knew something about Jeremiah Stebbins' money. And that gave him the idea. The idea that became a mania, a disease. And the disease infected Paula, too.
Harvey, is he?
Let's get started, Paula. We've got to get out of here fast.
Did everything go all right?
Be quiet, Paula. Hurry. Well, it's over. It went as smoothly as clockwork, just like we planned. Funny, I don't feel the least bit nervous now. Do you?
I'm frightened, Harvey.
It'll wear off. You know, the moment I laid his hat and stick on the riverbank, a great feeling of peace came over me. Seemed as if I was stepping into a new world. And that's what it's going to be for us, Paula. A new world.
He was good to us, Harvey.
Yes, yes, of course he was. But think how much better he's going to be to us this way. Oh, there's the bridge ahead.
All right.
No cars behind us. Good. All right, now, slow down. Well, here goes the wrench out the window. There. Long may it rest at the bottom of the river. All right, now, back to the house. We've got to be there before Mrs. Wellers returns.
What if we made a mistake?
There's been no mistake, Paula. I'm just as sure of that as I'm sure that Captain Stebbins is dead and lying at the bottom of the river.
As attorney for the late Jeremiah Stebbins, and in accordance with the instructions of the deceased, I have called together you, his beneficiaries, for the reading of his last will and testament.
They've found the body, Mr. Rand?
No, Mr. Adams, not yet. However, the police informed me that Captain Stebbins has been officially declared a suicide.
Oh, I can't believe he's gone, Mrs. Adams.
I can't believe it.
Mrs. Wellers, please.
Yes, ma'am.
You may begin, Mr. Rand.
I, Jeremiah Stebbins, being of sound mind and disposing memory, do hereby make my last will and testament. To Agnes Wellers, my housekeeper, for whose constant devotion and kind care I have been ever thankful.
I was only too happy to do whatever I could. You know that, Mrs. Adams.
I know, Mrs. Wellers. And he knew, too.
Of course he did, Mrs. Wellers.
Oh, Mr. Adams, I'll miss him so.
We all will. Now pull yourself together. All right, Mr. Rand.
Yes. To Agnes Wellers, my housekeeper, for whose constant devotion and kind care I have been ever thankful, I hereby bequeath the sum of $25,000. In addition, it is my will and desire that Agnes Wellers be permitted to reside in my house, in the quarters which have been her home, for so long as she may desire to remain there. To Paula and Harvey Adams, who have been my close and trustworthy friends and who have filled my life with bountiful happiness, I bequeath all my property and my remaining monies, which total $250,000.
Why, how kind of him. We were nothing to him, really, but he treated us like a father would.
There's more. Another provision. It is my will that this legacy shall be transmitted to Paula and Harvey Adams 6 months from the date of the reading of this, my last will and testament, provided that the following terms are fulfilled. And in the event that these terms are not accomplished, I hereby will that my entire estate shall go to Agnes Wellers.
What's that?
Shall I go over it?
No, never mind. Continue.
During the period prior to the transmittal of the legacy, Paula and Harvey Adams shall deliver to my appointed attorney each month one of the 6 brass buttons from my sea jacket.
Brass buttons?
That's what it says, Mr. Adams. Each month, one of the 6 brass buttons from my sea jacket.
Why, I don't believe it.
Harvey.
Why, it's a trick. The will wasn't that way when I...
When what, Mr. Adams?
Well, I mean, it's preposterous. Captain Stebbins wouldn't do that to us.
Do what?
Why, it's ridiculous. Brass buttons from his sea jacket.
Mr. Adams, this is Captain Stebbins' bona fide will. Those are the terms. You must comply with them. It shouldn't be very difficult, should it?
Why, no, I guess not. I'm sorry, Mr. Rand. It was just a little unexpected. You shall have the buttons. All 6 of them.
Sir?
Yes, Mrs. Wellers.
Sir, the day that Captain Stebbins took his life.
Yes?
The day they say he took his life. He was wearing the sea jacket with the 6 brass buttons.
Although Jeremiah Stebbins is officially listed as a suicide, there are a few questions I must ask. Just routine.
Why, certainly, Inspector. We understand.
And Mrs. Wellers.
Yes, sir.
According to your former employer's will, Mrs. Wellers, and the fact that Captain Stebbins' body has not been found as yet, there is an excellent chance, isn't there, of your becoming the sole beneficiary of the Stebbins estate?
Oh, I don't want the money. Captain Stebbins meant it for Mr. Adams and his wife.
Yes, so it appears, but in case the buttons aren't delivered...
Oh, don't say things like that.
Esther, please. She's very upset.
I merely said, Mrs. Adams, there is a chance of her getting the money.
But you make it look as if I...
As if you what, Mrs. Wellers?
Well, sir, as if I... Oh, Mr. Adams, make him stop. Please, make him stop.
The inspector doesn't mean anything.
Inspector, we've had a trying day, all of us. Mrs. Wellers, my wife, and I have suffered a great loss. As far as I can see, there's nothing you can accomplish by your questions.
No?
No. You've upset this poor woman enough. I must ask you to leave.
I hardly expected anyone to get so excited over a few routine questions, since it's quite obvious who will receive Captain Stebbins' legacy.
All this, Paula. All this and all his money will be hers if we don't find those buttons.
But Harvey, she said he was wearing a jacket.
Paula, that jacket is someplace in this house. I know it. Did you look where I told you?
Yes. We'll never find it.
I'll search through the attic.
Captain Stebbins knew what we were going to do with him. That's why...
Stop it, Paula. Stebbins was just an eccentric old sailor. We'll play his game of treasure hunt, Paula. And we'll win. Not in the attic. Did you try in the cellar again?
Yes.
Paula, the hothouse. Why didn't I think of it before? Of course, the hothouse.
It wasn't there?
No. But we'll find that jacket and those 6 buttons if we have to tear this house apart from top to bottom.
This closet. I can't open it.
What?
I think it's locked.
Here, let me try it. It is locked, Paula. I think we've come to the end of our treasure hunt. I'll open this door.
Mr. Adams. My room. What's happened? What are you doing here?
Mrs. Wellers, unlock this door.
But you have no right to come in my room this way. If Captain Stebbins were alive...
He's not alive. He's dead. And this is my house now. If you don't unlock this door, I'll call the police.
Well, I'm not one to cause any trouble, Mr. Adams.
Well, then unlock it.
Here's the key, sir.
That's better. Paula, it's not in here.
I told you, Mr. Adams. He was wearing that sea jacket with the buttons the day he died.
Paula, are you going to sit here all night sewing?
Harvey, do you think Mrs. Weller suspects us?
Of course not. She'd have gone to the police long ago.
Maybe we'd better get out of this house. Now. Maybe we'd better get out of this city.
Get out of this house. That's rich. In 3 more days, the first month will be up, Paula. Then we'll have to get out. Because of 6 ridiculous brass buttons. This house, everything will be hers in just 3 more days.
Yes, just 3 more days.
Yes, you almost sound relieved.
Relieved? Yes, Harvey, it's better this way.
Better? To lose everything? To work, to plan, and be left with nothing?
Oh, we can start all over
again. Start over again with what?
We have each other.
Each other. That's great. Paula, for heaven's sake, stop that sewing. Put it away.
All right, Harvey. Harvey.
What's the matter?
My sewing box.
What is it?
There, in the box.
In the box. Paula, we found the first button from Captain Stebbins' sea jacket.
In a darkened tavern along the waterfront, a sea captain leans heavily against the bar. He and the bartender talk, while the waterfront noises gradually fade, and the harbor lights around them, one by one, are shut. He tells the story of a murder and of a will. The murder of a sea captain like himself, and a will which demands that the beneficiaries deliver to the captain's lawyer 6 buttons from the captain's sea jacket. Let us enter the tavern to hear the captain continue his strange story.
Well, barkeep, Paula and Harvey Adams found the first of Captain Stebbins' 6 brass buttons. The buttons that meant the difference between a fortune and poverty.
Yeah, so you said. The button was in the sewing box. How did it get there?
Should I go on with the story?
Sure, sure, go ahead.
Well, as I said, the first button turned up. Only 5 more to go. And things were looking a little brighter for Harvey. But it was different with Paula. Very different.
Please, please, Harvey. Let's go away. We can't stay in this house another day.
We're not leaving.
Captain Stebbins brought that button here.
Stop that nonsense, Paula.
He's come back from the dead to punish us. Harvey, this house is cursed. We've got to get out of here before it's too late.
Shut up, Paula. Do you want Wellers to hear us?
She knows we killed him.
Paula.
They all know.
I told you to stop it.
Harvey.
Stupid, hysterical fool. You'll ruin everything. That button didn't fall out of thin air, Paula. Somebody is trying to frighten us. All we've got to do is keep our nerve. If we play our cards right, we can't lose, Paula. We can't lose. Paula, I'm going out. Did you hear me, Paula? I said I'm going out.
All right, Harvey.
Don't leave this room till I get back. And keep away from Wellers, understand?
Yes.
Did my top coat come back from the cleaners?
It's in the closet.
Paula. When did this coat come back?
Yesterday.
Who put it in the closet?
I did.
Well, look at it. Look.
Harvey.
It's been sewn on. The second brass button.
He did it. He's come back again. From the dead.
The second button. Here it is, Mr. Rand.
You're early this month.
Yes, I didn't want to keep you waiting.
Northbound Express. Express on track 5, leaving at 2:20. Northbound Express on track 5, leaving at 2:20.
Ticket for Chicago, please.
Round trip, ma'am?
One way. Hurry. Please hurry.
Paula. Paula, stop.
Oh, Harvey.
You can't run away from me. I won't let you. Come along. I warned you, Paula, not to leave the house.
I can't stay there, Harvey. Please let me go away, please.
Let you go away? Do you think I'm crazy? I've got to keep my eye on you, Paula. For all I know, you may be behind this button business.
Harvey!
I said you may be. Or it could be Wellers or that lawyer, Rand. I don't trust any of you. I'm taking no chances. You're going back to the house, Paula. And if you try this again...
Pardon me, madam. Here, you drop your change purse.
I'll take it, thanks. Don't be so careless, Paula. Here.
But that's not mine.
Not yours? Say, you, this doesn't belong... He's disappeared in the crowd. I wonder whose it is. Maybe there's an identification inside. Paula. Look. In the purse.
Throw it away, Harvey. Please.
You fool, Paula. Do you know what this means? The third brass button.
She's sleeping now.
Will she be all right, Doctor?
I'd say she's on the verge of a complete mental collapse.
Oh?
I suggest you take her away immediately. A few months in the country will bring her about, I'm sure.
Yes, but that's not possible. I mean, not right now. I have important business to attend to.
I can offer no other advice. If you keep your wife in this house, Mr. Adams, you are doing so at the risk of her sanity.
You've got to pull yourself together, Paula. Do you hear me?
Captain Stebbins will come back. He'll come back to this house again. It's cursed. I've got to get out of here. I've got to.
No, you're staying in bed. Lie down.
I can't. I can't stay here. Please let me go. Please.
Stop it, Paula.
Oh.
You're not leaving yet. And stop that crying. Oh. Just when there's a chance, just when things are working out the way we planned, this has to happen.
Oh. I don't want the money. I don't want this house.
Well, I do. And I'm going to get it. Oh. Nothing's going to stop me. Nothing. Oh. Time for your medicine, Paula. Oh. At least it'll keep you quiet for a while. Where is it? In this drawer? Oh, here's the box. Paula, stop that infernal weeping. Here, take one of these. Here. Paula. The fourth button. In the box.
Oh, I told you, Harvey, he'd come back again. You wouldn't believe me, would you? I told you he'd come back again from the river.
Hello?
Mr. Adams?
Yes?
Mr. Rand.
Oh, yes, Mr. Rand.
I've been waiting for you. The fifth button is due today.
Yes, I know.
Are you bringing it down? I'm afraid I can't wait any longer in my office here. I'm due home for dinner. I'm leaving now.
Well, I have until midnight. You'll have your fifth button, Mr. Rand. Don't worry about it.
Then I'll see you before midnight. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Oh, Mr. Adams,
yes?
Here's a package for you. It was just delivered.
Who brought it?
Well, messenger, just a moment ago.
Who was he?
Well, I don't know,
sir. All right, Mrs. Wellers, that's all.
Thank you, sir.
Yes. The fifth button. The fifth button. Here it is, Mr. Rand. I'm sorry to have interrupted your dinner.
It's quite all right. Well, Mr. Adams, a month from today, you will be a very rich man, providing you have that sixth button.
Sixth button. That didn't come, Paul. I've been tricked.
Yes, Harvey, you've been tricked by a dead man.
30 minutes to go. In just 30 minutes, the deadline will be reached. I'll lose everything.
You won't get that sixth button, Harvey. You'll never...
Shut up, you crazy fool. That button will turn up yet, Paula.
It'll be too late then. You'll never get that money, Harvey. Captain Stebbins doesn't want you to have it.
Don't you know that?
No. It's not Captain Stebbins. It's you, Paula. You don't want me to have it. Paula, where is that sixth button?
I don't know, Harvey. Captain Stebbins knows.
Stop that nonsense. Where is that sixth button? You're hiding it from me.
No, Harvey. I'm not hiding
it. You're lying. Tell me where it is.
Don't! You're hurting my throat.
Are you going to tell me where that button is?
I don't know.
You're lying, Paula.
Oh,
tell me where you hid that sixth button or I'll kill you. Tell me. Tell me. You know where it is, Paula. Tell me, do you hear me? Tell me. Paula. Paula. I've killed you. I've killed you.
Sergeant Watkins.
I just killed my wife.
What's that?
My name is Harvey Adams. I killed my wife.
You what?
I killed her because I loved her. I loved her very much. Everything I did was for her, and now she's dead, and I'm here alone. You.
Hello? Hello?
I'm not alone. Not alone. You can't fool me. I know what you are. You're a ghost. But you can't frighten me. You're dead, Captain Stebbins. I killed you. You've come here to frighten me, but you can't. You hear me? I'm not afraid of you. Yes, but Paula was. You did it, Captain Stebbins. You made me kill her, and now you've come to... No. No, don't come near me. Stay away from me. No. No, I don't want it. Take it away. It's cursed. I don't want the button. I don't want it! Take it away! Take it away!
And when the police arrived, Barkeep, they found Harvey Adams alone, cringing in a corner, stark, staring mad.
Well, that's enough to drive anybody crazy, seeing the ghost of the man you killed.
It wasn't a ghost.
Huh? Oh, now, hold on. You mean Captain Stebbins wasn't really dead?
It's an old saying, men of the sea drown hard. Harvey Adams would have done well to know that. His wrench never killed the captain. The water revived the old man, and he returned from the dead for justice.
For justice?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see. But who are you? Now, you're not going to tell me you're...
Captain Stebbins?
Yeah.
Well, Barkeep, my ship will be weighing anchor. I'll be getting along. As I say, the land's no place for a man of the sea.
From shadows and stillness, mystery weaves a spell of strangest fascination, charging the mind with doubts and fears. For mystery is a strange companion, a living memory in the haunting hour.
The Haunting Hour, on Tuned to Yesterday, an NBC broadcast from 1945. You're listening to an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now time for a creepy story, maybe in particular to this host on Quiet Please, called A Night to Forget, which takes place in a radio studio. Writer of the story and the director of the show, Willis Cooper, also wrote one for Lights Out, which was called Coffin in Studio B, very similar, and still is scary. This one called A Night to Forget, heard on March 22nd, 1948 on Mutual.
Quiet, please. Quiet, please. Broadcasting System presents Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet, Please for tonight is called A Night to Forget.
Excuse me. It's dark in here. I can't find a doggone lights. Where's the lights?
There aren't any lights, John H.
Who's that?
It's me.
What'd you say about the lights?
I said there aren't any lights.
There's got to be.
Not in here, John H.
Well, isn't this Studio 15?
You kidding? This is the morgue.
That was last night. I think it was a dream. I remember I went to bed early because I had to get up so early this morning to get that stuff to Ted before he takes off for California. I drank a bottle of ginger ale with some lemon juice. I read Variety for about 15 minutes. Then I went to sleep. Must have been no later than 10:30. Then this happened. You know how it is sometimes when you get in a dream and you don't think you're dreaming, and when you wake up, you wonder whether it happened or not? Well, I was walking down the hall to Studio 15 for this broadcast, and when I went in, it was all dark. And I stumbled around trying to find the lights, and I hit my shin on something, and then this voice in the dark talked to me.
You kidding? This is the morgue.
I'll be darned if I can figure it out. I think it was a dream, all right. But my shin hurts where I barked it. And it's all black and blue. I woke up, and I lay there quite a while. You know, half dopey, trying to figure it out. I turned the lights on finally, and I was right there in my room with my shin hurting me. I know I hadn't been out of bed because I was all wound up in the covers. And I couldn't get back to sleep again. You know how it is? You have a nightmare and you're afraid to go back to sleep because you might have another one, a worse one. Well, listen. I was just lying there in my own room with the lights on, looking at the ceiling and trying to think. And it began to get dark. No, the lights didn't go out. I could see the lights, but it was dark. Everything just sort of faded, like in a movie, you know? And pretty soon it was black dark. I tried to get up, but I couldn't. And I just lay there, flat on my back, in the dark and the silence, and I was scared.
Doesn't he look nice?
Beautiful.
He's got that blue and white shirt on that I gave him.
I wish I could have got that tie from him in time. I always liked that tie.
It is pretty. He certainly looks nice.
Certainly does.
Look, will you two please get out of my room?
What'd you say, John H?
I said get out of my room.
Why, this isn't your room, John H.
Now, look.
Of course it isn't.
Now, look, if I have to get up and chase you out of here...
Right, John H. You know you can't get off.
Of course you can't.
You're dead, John H.
And then it got... well, undark. And pretty soon it was just the same as it was before I fell asleep. If I did fall asleep. Look, I'm a hard-headed guy, even if I do work on supernatural radio shows. You don't want to believe this stuff. You go nutty. Only, well, sometimes I always sleep in pajamas. Both halves. I put on my pajamas when I went to bed last night. Red and white striped Textron. Yeah. Well, when I woke up, or when it got undark again, I was wearing a blue and white shirt I never saw in my life. And I was wearing a hand-painted Countess Mara necktie that I never saw before either. So this is too good. Somebody's playing funny jokes on me. I love practical jokers. In a pig's eye, I do. Radio's full of practical jokers. All sorts of bum gags, like Don Ameche used to do when he was a radio actor. You used to be reading a commercial, giving a this and that. Don would come up behind you and start to take your coat off. Well, you know you can't stop. You're on the air and you have to make with this thing. So you'd wiggle around. The first thing, you'd have your coat. Then he'd unbutton your suspender buttons. Take off your necktie. You can't do a thing but keep that old smile in your voice and go about locked in goodness and please, Mrs. Housewife, buy the large economy size and holding onto your pants with one hand, and it's all very, very funny. Especially if the sponsor's sitting there in the booth looking at you. So I say to myself, some practical joker. Only I add a couple of adjectives to that. Only thing is, how did he get the lights to go out? I lie there a while, and I think, and I try to figure it out. And I shut my eyes, I guess. Anyway, when I open them, it was dark again. I am walking around in the dark, and the ground is springy underfoot. There's a cool wind blowing. What are those things? Those white things. Why, they look like gravestones. They are gravestones.
Will you stand to one side, please, Johnny?
Excuse me.
I gotta get to work, see? This is an extra special rush job, and I gotta get it done right away. Did you say something, Johnny?
I was just gonna ask you, what is this place?
My goodness, John H., this is a cemetery.
Cemetery?
Certainly. Would you move your foot a little?
What am I doing in a cemetery?
What do people usually do in a cemetery, John H.?
Why, what are you doing?
Me? I'm just chiseling your name on this gravestone.
And there it was, laid out in chalk on the gravestone. John H. And I shut my eyes. When I opened up again, I was lying on my bed. Well, you know what people mean when they say their mind reels? Oh, boy, I do. I rubbed my eyes, and I felt like sand on my fingers. It wasn't sand, though. It was marble dust. Brother, I was shivering. This kind of nightmare is a little too real. Then the telephone rang. And so I got up to answer it. Mind you, I was awake. Well, I know I was. Well, the lights were on. I got up and I picked up the receiver. And I said, hello? Hello?
Sure is too bad, isn't it?
Sure is. I never heard of such a thing.
Hello? Hello?
Poor old John H.
This is John H. Hello?
Poor old L, I'd say. It's tougher on him than on John H.
L? L who?
L April. You know, the sound effects man.
Oh, I didn't know his name.
Who is this? Hello?
Yes, he feels pretty awful about it.
Well, I should think he would.
Who is...
killing a man. He didn't mean to, you dope. I know it, but just the same. Poor old John H.
He didn't know it was loaded. I mean, loaded with bullets. Matter of fact, there was just the one bullet.
One was enough.
Right on the air, too.
Yeah. I bet that was the first time a radio audience ever heard a real killing.
Yeah.
Hello. I want to know who this is.
What about its commercials? You know?
John H., you mean?
Yeah.
Well, I'm auditioning for the big one tomorrow.
You are?
Yeah, they called me this morning.
Gee, I wonder if I could get in on that.
Well, I don't know. I'm pretty sure they're going to pick me.
I think I'll try anyway. Sure you won't mind?
No.
Well, I'll see you. Poor old John H.
Yeah, too bad, wasn't it? So long.
Who is that? Hello? Hello?
Yes, sir?
You got me in on a crossed wire or something.
Oh, no, sir.
Well, when you rang me, I picked up the phone and...
Well, I'm sorry, sir, but I didn't ring you.
What?
Well, I hadn't had a call for you all evening.
Now, that wasn't a nightmare. Or a dream. That happened. Even if the operator did say she didn't ring me. Whoever it was playing a joke on me, they fixed it with the operator so she'd say that. Didn't they? All right, that's the way I figured it, too. So, this was about 11:30. At 12:30, the manager of the hotel called me on the phone.
I hate to wake you up at this hour of the night, John H., but I thought maybe radio registry or somebody might have called you and couldn't get you, see? And I know how important it is for people on the radio to get their calls.
What are you talking about?
Why, I just thought you might want to call registry and see if they've been trying to get you, see?
I don't get it.
Oh, excuse me. See, something happened to our telephones about 10 o'clock and nobody's been able to get a call in or out of the hotel since then. And
well, maybe my practical jokers might have got to the manager, too, but this morning when I came downstairs, I found he wasn't kidding. The phones had been out for 2.5 hours. Something blew up on the switchboard or something. Well, that's carrying a practical joke an awful long ways, isn't it? Yeah. That's one night I won't forget, believe me. Yeah, but I gotta stop this kind of talk. And this kind of thinking. I will forget it. Heck, it was probably a lot of nightmares. I'm going to stop drinking ginger ale before I go to bed. Well, anyway, I saw Ted and gave him the stuff and he got away to California okay. I sort of had a hunch that if this was a gag, Ted might have had a hand in it. So I made a few cracks, but he didn't give it a tumble, you know, like he would if he'd had anything to do with it. He can go just so far with a gag and then he can't keep his face straight. But he didn't fall for any of my hints at all. So, man, I gotta forget it. But just for laughs, when I see that Al April, I'm gonna make him show me that sound effects pistol. Believe me. So then I went and did my commercial. The guy from the agency was there. He had the renewal of my contract with him, so... Well, anyway, after I signed it and he signed it, I'm not going to hold auditions for my job tomorrow. So, like they say on the radio, here we are at the bottom of the well. This is no dream. This is the hallway that goes down to Studio 15. And there's Miss Rose. Hello, Miss Rose. Through the door. There's the drinking fountain on the left. And the lights are turned on. It's bright. Early today. I'm going to be here early so I can talk to Al April and look at that sound effects gun. Yeah, the light switch is right where it always was. And the lights go on. Nobody here yet.
You're late, Johnny.
Oh, I'm not either. Look at the clock. Oh. Who are you?
I'm Mr. Deed. I got your note and I came right over.
What note?
The note you wrote me to meet you here tonight.
I didn't write any note.
Why, you certainly did. I've got it right here in my briefcase. Well, got it right here.
I don't know what you're talking about, mister.
Just a second. Oh, my goodness, I don't seem to have it after all. But I'm here, so that's all that matters, isn't it?
What'd you say your name is?
Dee.
Well, what'd you want? I'm on the air just a little
while. Oh, it won't take long, Johnny. I've got the catalog right here. And you can pick one out in no time. About how high do you want to go?
What'd you say your name is again?
Dee. Ah, here's the catalog.
How do you spell it?
Spell what?
Your name.
Oh, D-E-A-T-H. Shall we sit down here at the table where I can spread out the catalog?
Listen, Mr. Deeth, or whatever your name is, this gag has gone just about far enough.
Why, what gag, Johnny?
Your gag, my friend's gag. I'm tired of it. Suppose you scram.
What are you talking about, Johnny? I don't indulge in gags. Not in my business.
And what is your business, Mr. Death, pronounced Deeth?
I don't know whether you're trying some of your radio humor on me, Johnny. You drag me all the way down from the Bronx to let you pick out a coffin.
A coffin?
You think I'm in the grocery business?
Listen, I...
Now, this one here, you wouldn't want. Man as well-known and prosperous as you, Johnny, you wouldn't want to be found dead in this one. No, sir, you wouldn't be found dead in it. Hey?
Look, Buster, I don't want a coffin.
Then why did you sign an order for one and pay a substantial down payment?
I didn't.
All right, all right. Well, let's get this settled. This model, 23, codename Tired. This will set you back $4.41.23. Tax included, of course.
I don't want it.
Something a little more expensive, perhaps, eh? Ah, here's a dandy. Codename Sleepy. Solid rosewood. Well, practically solid. Hand polished silver alloy handles, nylon lining in your choice of color.
I don't want it.
Okay. Okay. Ah. Well, what do you know about this for a coincidence?
Huh?
By George, I didn't know this model was in the book. Look at that.
What?
Look at the code name.
Code name? John H.
A job. You know, I haven't seen this model yet. Look how it's streamlined. Plastics, too. The latest thing. Real built-in factory engineered dependability. Finest model we've ever made. And look, it's fireproof. And that coincidence about the code name, the John H. You know what, John H.? You'll be the very first user of this latest model. Stand up.
What for?
My goodness, this is a made-to-measure job, John H. Nothing too good for you famous radio people. Stand right up there. That's it. Now, let me see. Dimension A. My, you have broad shoulders, don't you? Now, let me put this down. There.
Listen, mister, please,
I'm going to get it absolutely right, John H. I tell you, I can hardly wait to see you in it. Stand still.
Listen, this has gone far enough.
Just hold the tape, Major. Now, let me see. 3 inches above your head. Now, 6 feet 4 inches. I didn't realize you were that tall, John H. How much do you weigh?
Well, let's see. I've lost 17 pounds since I went on the diet.
My, my. You must tell me about that. If we have time. 17 pounds.
Yeah.
And that makes it...
191.
Oh, my gracious, I can save you a little money then. The oversized models carry a 4% discount, you see. The little ones are harder to make. You're very fortunate, John H. Now.
Huh?
The plaque on the lid. See here?
Yeah.
Well, we can engrave that with any lodge emblem or, you know. Are you an odd fellow or a moose or anything like that? You are a big fellow, and I suppose you could say in slang that you're a big moose. Get it?
No. The only thing I belong to is the lambs.
Lambs? Lambs. Oh, my, John H., I really don't think we could do that. You see, we carry all the well-known emblems in stock, but the lambs, we'd have to have that engraved, and I'm terribly afraid there won't be time.
Huh?
Oh, you said it was a rush job, remember? Matter of fact, it's tonight, isn't it?
What's tonight?
When you ought to be killed. If I remember correctly, you said in your note with the order that a sound effects pistol was...
Mr. D., did I write that?
Well, I couldn't swear to it in court, of course, John H., but somebody wrote it, and your name was signed to it.
Well, look, I'll write my name. Is that the signature?
Absolutely identical, John H. Yes, sir, absolutely identical. I remember the curlicues on H.
I don't understand.
It's perfectly simple. You're going to die, and you need a respectable, refined, late model coffin, that's all.
Are you sure I'm going to die?
Cheer up, John H. Of course you're going to.
You know, I heard that before.
Yeah, it's all over town.
Tonight.
That's what you said.
By a shot from a sound effects pistol.
I saw it in your own handwriting.
How did I know, Mr. D?
I'm sure I don't know, Johnny.
Isn't there any way out of it?
Don't ask me. I'm just a salesman. And you're just a customer. Not that I don't enjoy listening to you on the radio, Johnny. I really do. And I must say that you're going to be a great loss to the art, science, profession. What do you call it?
It's a living.
A living. And now it's a dying. Mustn't mind my little jokes, John H. I'm an inveterate joker.
Is this one of your jokes?
Oh, no, John H. This is strictly business. Now, did you want to give me a check for the remainder now?
Well, I
think possibly that'd be wisest, considering that, you know how long it takes to get money out of an estate.
Now, look, what if I don't die?
Oh, I wouldn't worry about that.
Well, what if I don't?
Well, you will eventually, John H., and at least we'd have time to engrave anything you wanted on the plaque.
Mm-hmm.
So, excuse me. Is this the gentleman that's going to shoot you?
Huh? Oh, hello, Al.
Hi, John H. Well, you get killed again tonight.
I do, huh?
Yeah. Says here you do.
How do I get killed this time, Al?
Get shot.
I see. Excuse me, Mr. D.
Certainly. Is he the one?
He's the sound man. Al April.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Say, Al.
Yeah?
You ever have any accidents with those guns?
No. How could you?
I don't know.
What kind of accidents?
Really shooting somebody.
With these things? No. Look, in the first place, they're loaded with blanks. In the second place, there ain't any place for the bullet to come out, if there was one. And in the third place, I always shoot them at the floor. So how could I shoot somebody?
I was just wondering.
You know, I always wondered how you do sound effects on the air. This is most interesting.
This is Mr. D, Fal.
How are you, Mr. D? Your face looks familiar. You in radio?
Oh, my, no. I'm a salesman.
Oh.
Can I look at the guns, Al?
Sure.
Which one you going to use on the show?
This one. Say, what's the matter with you, John H.?
I'm a little nervous, I guess, Al.
I thought you was on the wagon.
Well, I am. I'm just a little nervous, I guess. Let's see the bullets.
They're not bullets. Blanks.
Well, the blanks.
Ooh, here.
How do you load it?
Oh, give it to me. There.
Can I shoot it?
Sure. What do you want to shoot it for?
Well, I got to make sure of something.
John H., you sure he's going to be shot tonight?
Yeah, that's right, Al. I just want to test out these shells.
Well, that's silly because... Oh, go ahead. But don't point it at me.
Oh, I thought you said you couldn't shoot anybody with it.
Well, you know, the wadding. It stings, kind of.
You'd use these same shells on the show, huh?
Well, sure. What you scared of?
I got a hunch, Al.
Well, those are the same shells I'll use on the show. Go ahead and shoot. I'm going to get set up.
Okay, Al. You ask for it.
Hey, don't point that gun at me. Doggone it. Hey, I told you about that wadding. It stings. Doggone it.
I'm sorry, Al.
You shot me.
There, Mr. Deith.
Why, John H., you killed him.
That's right. So I'm not going to die after all. Take your coffins and get out of here.
Why, don't be silly, John H. Of course you're going to die.
I am not.
Why, certainly you are. You murdered poor Al in cold blood, and they'll send you to the electric chair.
Yeah? How are they going to do that? They won't have any witnesses except you.
Why, John H., how foolish. What about the people listening to you on the radio? Goodness, John H., don't you know you're on the air?
Quiet, Please, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 22nd of March, 1948, on the Mutual Broadcasting System. And so closes this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.